Mary Pippin.
K-P-I-S.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do. That's all right. That's all right.
Michael Bertrand is here, and he wrote a book called Race, Rock, and Elvis by University of Illinois Press. Interesting book. I tell you, people need to, Michael, really take a shot at reading this. It's a good read. It certainly doesn't read like, you know, a thesis. You've done some good work here.
Oh, well, thank you, Jerry. It was fun. It wasn't your regular dry topic.
And I had to try to count all of the research stuff that you did. It was pages and pages, 20 or 30 pages of the things that you've researched on. So you've spent some time on this. How do your students feel about you being a noted author now?
Actually, it's really fun down in Oxford. Oxford, Mississippi is probably about 11,000 people and another 11,000 students. And it's really nice walking around in Oxford because everybody knows everybody. And
I had an email. I can get it printed off in here in time, but they don't say where they're from anyway. But they wanted to know what you do, and you teach. What subject do you actually teach there?
Yeah, I teach history, American history. I teach basically the U.S. history surveys. I also teach on the Civil War. I teach on civil rights. I teach the South in the 20th century. I teach a little bit of William Faulkner. I even had a course this past spring on a seminar course on rock and roll music and Southern culture. So pretty much 20th century South is...
Now, how does the academia take to your rock and roll thesis and things like that? I mean, the William Faulkner, I can understand them understanding that. It was like a slap in the face, like a hot, humid day, and I needed one more mint julep or whatever.
Right.
But I mean...
No,
how do they take about the rock and roll thing?
It's getting better, but it's been... I still walk down the halls and I have colleagues that look at me kind of funny, like, when am I going to do something serious here? When am I going to do something that's really history and not with Presley or rock and roll?
Was Elvis serious or not about this race thing? I mean, you take him serious, but how about him at the time?
Presley himself, I'm not sure. I don't know that generation. I think what's interesting what I ask in the book is how does change occur? And that's one of the questions, you know, social change. How does change occur? Does it always happen by intent, or And again, I don't want to make light, and I never have made light of the civil rights activists and people who fought in the civil rights movement, people who suffered, died, and so forth. But I'm also interested in how change occurs, if maybe things on the sidelines are just as, or not just as important, but they also help the change come along. And I think that's what happens with this. I think with music, I think it's definitely on the side. It's not something that is the main event. But I think that you're having changes going on there that are happening almost, they're by accident, but they're almost happening, they're just happening, and people aren't really thinking about it. And I don't think that Presley personally probably thought much about race relations, or, but I think that the situation...
Well, I've never heard that he was a bigot or anything, so
no.
I know he was, and it's... So from that standpoint, even though he's a Southern boy, I think he was probably neutral on the thing.
And that, I think, is an advance in Southern history. If you look at Southern history in general, I think to be neutral on that subject is very much progression. And I think that's the key. I think that to become neutral in a segregated culture
It makes sense. I was thinking about earlier about this whole situation education levels. Elvis didn't go to college or anything, right? Did he graduate from high school even?
According to him, he barely got out of high school. He barely escaped. And I think, again, that represents a lot of from his class and from his region. He did not go to college. He was asked once by a reporter if he ever considered going to college, and he looked at the reporter as if the reporter was...
out of another world.
Out of touch. And he said, no, we grew up poor, and I never thought about going to college, and I'm not going to quit all this now. So I think what's interesting with comparing...
And then again, then of course, and I didn't mean to interrupt, I'll let you compare somebody in a minute, but then of course, Elvis had to serve in the Army, and other people like Pat Boone, I don't think they did.
No, they're not.
I think he had a deferment for college, didn't he?
Sure, exactly. Boone went to college, and he went to Columbia for a while, and... one of the differences, I think, with Presley and why you can look at Presley when he performed rhythm and blues material and how he's different from others, like a Boone, is that he was coming from a class in the South that was historically looked down upon. And I think that while you cannot say that they were looked down upon to the same degree as African Americans in the South, I think that they were looked down upon tremendously. And I think one reason that they turned to music, when you think of the South and you think of... when you think of the music that comes out of the South that's the most significant, it's usually working class music. And you wonder why. I think the reason is because you don't have to have power, you don't have to have money or prestige to be able to use music. And I think people of Presley's class, that's why they turned to music as a means to represent themselves. They did not have political power, economic power. Music was a way they had to express themselves. And I think that's important.
It's interesting interesting that the state of Tennessee has Nashville and Memphis, both met milestones in their own ways for music. And then we talk about other places in the South. The South is really, even today, is still a pretty good place for creativity. Maybe you got a point there, Michael. Maybe that's the point, that they just, that's the way they get out of the ghetto, the white ghetto.
Sure. No, I think it is. And... I think it gives them a means to be creative in ways that perhaps they cannot do so economically or politically. So I think that's important. I think another question that comes up with this often is, some of these same kids that are digging rock and roll music in the early to mid-50s, perhaps going to be some of the same people who vote for George Wallace and Richard Nixon and so forth in the late 1960s. And I think the one factor seems to, in many people's minds, seems to eliminate the possibility that any change might have occurred race relations-wise in the 50s if these same people are acting that way later. And I think what that does, I think it looks at it from a historical point of view, in that a lot of things happen outside of music and popular culture that we need to focus in on. If you look at polls that were taken, long-term polls taken from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, the group of whites in the South that were most likely to accept changes in regards to race relations and civil rights. That group would have been those kids coming of age in the late 40s and early 50s, Presley's generation. What we have to do, I think, is ask, what happened after that? What happened, perhaps, to turn it, to come up with what we have now as this basically a right-wing turn, I guess.
Yeah, well, what happened? Do you have any idea, or is that going to be the next book?
That's basically the next book. It is coming out in the next book.
Okay, we'll find out about that. Now, we only got a couple of minutes left here. Once again, we thank you very much for coming by the studio, Michael Bertrand. The book is Race, Rock, and Elvis, and it's available at University of Illinois Press. And it's a hardback book that's got a very nice cover on it. And an interesting picture of Elvis. That's early Elvis there. It looks like he's singing That's All Right Mama on that, but I'm not sure what he is singing. Have we pretty much covered the essence of this, or have I gotten sidetracked off on the music part of it, and am I missing the message or something here?
No, the message I want to give in basic history is that not just a bunch of facts, and not just a bunch, that's what I try to tell my students. It's not just about a bunch of facts and memorization. It's about looking at how culture and people interrelate and react to each other. And I think this particular generation, culturally, I think they were changing. And I think that that's the message, really, is to look at history as not just facts and dates, but it's about the cultural forces that shape who we are today. What those kids were going through back then, they weren't perfect, and it didn't turn out as well as it probably should have, but they were going through a change. And so we don't need to look just at politics or economic indicators, but also at culture. And what's happening with popular culture? How does popular culture affect people, not only back in the 50s, but also in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and in this new millennium?
You know, we played That's All Right Mama on page 113 of Michael's book here. He talks about That's All Right Mama. And I guess you say that you have an interesting story there about Presley recording that and Sam Phillips excitedly rushing out of the control room and talking about it. And basically, I guess Scotty Moore's description of the initial reaction was not the best, or was he just puzzled, or what?
I think they didn't know quite what they had. I think it was such a mixed-up bag of stuff, and I think they were worried. I think Bill Black said, you know, basically, Bill Black, the bassist, said, well, you know, it sounds okay, but they might run us out of town for playing it. So they were worried about particularly the racial aspects, but they had something they didn't know what it was. They had something that was, it was completely new. And again, Presley took a lot of different things, put them together. He didn't invent rock and roll, I don't think, but he was a member of an audience who took what he heard around him and put it out.
You know, I don't know if Elvis ever even wrote a song.
I don't think so. I think he's credited on lot of songs.
Well, there was kind of a tradition there for a little while.
Exactly.
If you had, you know, publishers that give a little more fee there.
Exactly.
Give you half a cent or a cent of the royalty by putting your name on the publishing.
Sure. No, I don't think he did.
No, Phillips really, I've read several places, and you've done a lot of research on it. He wasn't necessarily impressed with Elvis right off the bat. Didn't know what to do with him either.
No, it took a year for Presley to come around to the Memphis Recording Service in Memphis. Sam Phillips had other irons in the fire. He was worried about other things. And even when Presley came in, he didn't really impress him at first. And it took a surprise by this rhythm and blues tune that he had in the back of his mind to actually get Phillips's. They were singing ballads and popular music of the day.
Well, I had read someplace where the first time Sam Phillips did that record Elvis, he did Dean Martin songs.
Sure. Yeah, he was doing Dean Martin songs. He was definitely, as the interesting thing about Presley, what happened here, here's a kid that wants to become the next Dean Martin. You know, it's something we need to investigate there, I think. We have to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, we are not necessarily what we perceive ourselves to be. And years ago, I'm not going to bore you, we're out of time, we've got about 30 seconds left, but I thought I was a real cool guy for a long time. It took me about 20 years to understand that I was an Oklahoma guy from Muskogee, Oklahoma, and I might as well enjoy it. I don't care. I might have thought I was cool and sophisticated, but everybody else saw me as a Midwestern, Southwestern guy Oklahoma, you know. And
well, later on, Elvis did some Dean Martin-type songs. This is one of his big hits. It's Now or Never. Thanks, Michael, for being on.
It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow will be too late. It's now or never, my love. When I first saw you, with your smile so tender, my heart was captured, my soul surrendered. I've spent a lifetime waiting for the right time. Now that you're near, the time is here at last. It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow will be too late. It's now or never, my love. Just like a willow, we would cry an ocean if we lost true love and sweet devotion. Your lips excite me, let your arms invite me, for who knows when. It's now or never.